Good. Good to see Gary. Made himself down again. Good. Nice to see you all. It's good to see the amount of musicians we have been blessed with, particularly when we're talking about David using his gifts of music to try and bring peace and harmony of God's blessing into troubled King Saul's life. So, we started last week, albeit me in a ghostly sort of form over on this particular screen, a new series of David. So it's nice to be physically here to join you all, which is lovely. We have a blessed time within Australia, I believe, within perceptions of our working week and within the blessings that we have in regards to holidays. And it was interesting, I was reading some varieties of forums during the week. Just sort of interesting. From what I understand, Japan used to have, I think, 7 days holiday, of which you gave one back to the company anyway. America has 2 weeks standard holiday. The UK is quite blessed. We had 5 weeks standard holiday. So coming to Australia, where we have 4 weeks standard holidays, but we have a stack of, you know, individual Mondays and Fridays and various other things. And I did like the Gruen transfer. And the Gruen transfer said, for those who don't know what the Gruen transfer is, it's all about advertising. And they'd set a target of why should we invade New Zealand? And so they came up with all these ideas. And the winning one was we should invade New Zealand because we'll get a bank holiday or a days off holiday once we've achieved it, because that's the way the Australians do things. No offense to a New Zealand crowd amongst us here. But we all see this antipodean humor. So I want to look at work. Because even though you may not perceive it, one of the things you can see from 1 Samuel 16 is how we look at work and how we go about things. So I just wanted to throw up a few memes that I came up with. So there should be about four. Let's try the first one. And you'll love the, you know, crab cakes and homebrew said this. One of my favorite meetings ever was with an Italian supplier, my boss. We need your updated quote by Monday, our time. Italian, this week is a holiday, so we can't. Boss, so that you know, I don't take holidays every day, is a work day. Italian, how unfortunate for your family. The next one says this, European out of offices. I'll be away camping for the summer. Email me again in September. American out of offices. I have left the office for 2 hours to undergo kidney surgery, but you can reach me on my cell anytime. Next one, please. I moved to New Zealand from the US in 2019, and I'm still trying to emotionally come to terms with my manager constantly urging me to take more of my annual leave and for longer chunks of time. I think there might be one more, is that right? France literally banned sending work emails after 6 p.m. Meanwhile, my clients are trying to schedule meetings on my weekends like, just because you have no work-life balance does not mean I too should work Sunday to Sunday with unlimited access. Thanks, Scott. What we're going to be looking at is the comparison of King Saul and the newly anointed David, who we know will come on to be king as well. But initially what we've got to understand is that God is a worker. God is, and he works. And everything that we do is a derivative of God the worker. When God designs work and we place him first, we are anointed to the task of that work and we find it kingly. We are doing king's work. And when you do worshipful work, it will bring reward, rich reward. However, what King Saul shows us is the temptation of success can often lead us beyond to extend the calling that God put upon us, so we overstep and step away from who he is. We find that when worship and work are separated, or when worship is done to advance work, then the consequences can be fatal. Because God is not a usable resource. He will never sit there and just be used for our benefit. He brings his presence to bear and offers us opportunity to join with him. He's not there for us to manipulate. And so what I want to talk about is the sin of Saul. You see, King Saul sinned in the midst of doing what should have been good, godly, kingly work. He was appointed by God, but he got ruined during that work that he was doing. So in the course of doing the appointed work, he stepped away from God's character. If you get some, try it at home if you want to, you've got Lego. You can try seeing how far you can build a Lego bridge out before the whole thing collapses. Because unless you build the structure so it's got foundations to support it, eventually you're going to get to a point where it just snaps off. And that's what Saul did. And he started off basing himself out of God. But the further and further he went on, the more and more it was just going to be inevitable of breaking away. When you build out over nothing, everything will collapse. We'll read in the future about David's sexual sin. And we'll acknowledge its personal effect upon our lives. We can easily identify about it and say we should avoid that. We should stay well away from that. But how many of us recognize the sin of Saul within our lives? How many recognize the sin of work? The author who I'm basing most of this series off says this: it's so very rarely talked about. It's not listed in any of the places within the Bible. In fact, you'd have to look hard into passages such as these to even perceive that the concept exists. Yet it does. The concept that where we take the work that God's been giving us and we use it such that we step away from who God is and we forget him and leave him behind. We step away from what should be kingly work and we move it for our own ends and our own benefits. You see, when I talk about surrendering to God not only means surrendering on the things that we're poor at, it also means surrendering to God on the things that we excel at. And Lord willing, we should be doing roles we excel at. You should be given work and you should be doing work which you enjoy. There's nothing wrong with enjoying your work. Kingly, worshipful work should bring rich reward. And you see, this is the trap. Because when you start kingly work and you're doing well at it, it's a real blessing, isn't it? It's exciting. You can see it. In fact, sometimes you can feel truly godlike because, you know, I just came home and I had such a great day. I was doing this. This worked right. I'm going to go in that. And you start to build upon it. The problem is, when you're on the high of work and everything's going well and you can see it tripping forward, it isn't much of a step to going from feeling truly godlike to believing ourselves to be godlike. And the problem with that one is, as soon as you believe yourself to be God, we don't need God. Or at least we don't seem to need him very much. Just consider your own working week. I mean, a lot of people nowadays, they'll be getting up at 7, traveling to work, doing their day, coming back, and probably by the time they're home and relaxing, it may well be 7 o'clock. A 12-hour day, 5 days a week. You could easily spend 60 of your hours either directly at work, connected to it, or thinking about it. Nearly a third of your life, really. Possibly more at times. So this is the key point. The world of work, for the bulk of our lives, is the primary context for our spirituality. It has to be, because that's where you spend most of your time. And so if God is not part of that workplace mentality, if you give no consideration to him during the moments you have on your day-to-day activities, then for the greater part of your life, God has no authority over you. That's challenging, isn't it? And can I say, from a pastor's point of view, it's just as easy for me to do the same sort of thing. You can be so skilled up, you can be so used to it, you can have done this for so long that sometimes you can do this and not think about God at all. And sadly, it doesn't take much, and I've watched it many, many times, and sometimes it's publicized in papers, to see ministers fall off the edge and build the bridge over nothing until it breaks. So this is not unique to secular by any means. It's a general concept that if God is designing us for kingly work, but we step out without him, inevitably, he isn't having authority over our lives in the place where we spend most of our time. And so we look to Saul. Saul, when he was first anointed, demonstrated some great things. In 1 Samuel 10:27, given opportunity to punish all of those people who stood against him, Saul magnanimously demonstrates God's authority and shows mercy. We know he demonstrated military prowess. Initially, he was seemingly showing humility when he was maintaining his chores back at his house before he'd established the whole routine of being king. But as you follow the life of Saul through, what you discover as you walk through his history, unfortunately, is despite his charm and despite his obvious charisma, a large, powerful man, first picked to lead the first kingdom, we realize that Saul himself wasn't really that much interested in God. Saul becomes absorbed by the work itself. And that's where the danger comes. You see, if you're good at what you're doing, it's easy to keep doing it well without God. Because if you're good at it, you just throw more into it. And you keep being good at it. But you're good at it in your own strength and not that of kingly work. Saul moves further and further away from God, but the work itself did not seemingly suffer because he throws more time and energy into it. The campaigns against his enemies go well. But we find that Samuel has to challenge Saul when he is disobedient against God. And we find that both of the disobediences represent worship. The first thing he does is he fails to sacrifice animals when he's told to by God. Slaughter all the animals. Slaughter everything you get, but he doesn't. He keeps some. And one of the other things he does is failing to wait for Samuel to come and offer sacrifices at the proper time, fearing the people themselves will walk away. King Saul takes it upon him to sacrifice one of the animals himself, absorbing the role of the priest. Why? Because Saul was quite ready to side with people to let them worship God on their own terms rather than on God's. Because he steps away from kingly authority work to saying, I've got to make it happen, and he's moving in his own strength, and these are the things I've got to do to make it happen. And he steps out, and he starts to use what God has designed for worship, manipulates it himself, and then says, that's how we're going to do it now. And so the sin of work takes over. Before we're too harsh on King Saul, each and every one of us needs to challenge ourselves. How many of us have done the same? How many of us come here to worship God on our terms, not on His? It's self-evident to most people here that we should try and keep our Sundays set aside to be with our community of faith. I'm preaching to the choir at this point. But we need to remember that. Whether we're young and starting our walk with the Lord, or whether we've been at it for so long that it should be just ingrained, the importance of saying gathering on a Sunday means putting aside other things. And often as I drive along the beach and I see people exercising or going for swims, I remind myself that these are not the things I shall be doing on a regular basis on a Sunday. Because God has said, make sure you gather. And for our chosen community faith, there's nothing special about 10 a.m., by the way, but for our chosen community of faith, that's when we've set to gather. But how many ministries have gone by the side in life because people have said, well, I'm taking that promotion now, so I can't do this anymore? The author of the book I'm following makes a very profound statement here and says, maybe a simpler lifestyle demanding less money would be a wiser option than a higher income demanding more time. And it's a challenge which should be upon each and every one of us to say, are we keeping the work that God has given us in its right proportion? Are we doing kingly work? You see, work is not sinful in and of itself. It is definitely meant to be kingly. And we are meant to be doing the king's work. But just think about what the king's work is doing. And here we come to David. David is tasked with being the armor bearer. He's been tasked with playing music. He's been tasked with trying to bring some sort of order to the chaos which has become King Saul's life. And interestingly enough, what better place for David to observe the problems of life than in the court of King Saul? You can learn just as much from somebody who does something badly as you can from somebody who does something well. One wit said to me, you could do 30 years of work, or you could do 1 year 30 times over. It all depends what you're prepared to learn from it. What sovereign work is meant to do is bring order out of chaos. What God is trying to get us to see is He's bringing the sanctity of things and people. What when God's getting involved in people's lives and you and I are doing that kingly work on behalf of Him, this should be the role we should be doing. We should be seeing victims from injustice set free. Sorry, victims delivered from injustice. We should see people who are seeing misfortune, who consider themselves initially as wretched, being given pardons. We should see those who are sick being healed. And I don't just mean being cured of physical ailments. I mean being set free from the tyranny of thinking they are worthless. Being set free from the concept that other people are better than them or they continue to have to prove themselves. All of this should be changed by being interacting with King's workers, you and I. You and I should be within the communities that we've been placed for our economic positions to be able to say, I value you because you're made in the image of God and not because of what I can get out of you. And you and I are doing the King's work when we're raising up that which is chaotic and bringing order to it to say, let's see God within this. Let's see the hope He's proclaiming in our life, and that can be in your life as well. We should bring honor to the people around us and by extension, the land that we live in as well. And let me tell you, there's definitive positions where the land is dishonored by the actions of the people. It's there in the Bible. And so therefore, by flipping that, the land will be honored and blessed by the actions of the people. So let's consider a few of these options. God's work isn't abstract. It's expressed in your week. It's all meant to be an extension of God's sovereignty. So I'm hoping this doesn't apply to you, but every time you break your word, lying for the sake of the company you work for, the sovereignty of God is damaged. But every time your work is solid, despite the profits of the company, God's kingdom is established. Are you the person at work where they say, don't ask Joe Blow, he won't do what you're going to ask him to do because that's a wrong thing? Or are you the person who will just do whatever you're told because that's what it's demanded of you? See, there's a real dichotomy in business. Businesses often expect and say, it's okay, we'll treat our suppliers badly or we'll treat our customers badly. We'll lie to them. I was a purchaser. My job was to buy things. And the first thing you learn is you say to people, when will this item I've just bought off you be delivered? I'll have it within the week. And they know as soon as they've got your money, they've got you. And it may well turn up in the week, but you basically know whatever promise that was going to go by the wayside. And so my job was just to phone them every single day and they got so annoyed they delivered it to me. Trust me, I was good at my job. But that's what they do in business. And I've chatted to some of you about the jobs and various other things. I worked for a company and we did what lots of companies did. We'd get the money that we were owed paid into us. And then we'd find loads of reasons not to pay the people we owed. Shocking. I've said this once before. I was asked one time, my boss put up boxes because one of our customers was coming in to check that we had all the stuff. And he said to me, Andrew, show them the boxes and tell them it's all the stuff. And I said, Gary, give me the day off tomorrow. Because if you ask me to do that, I'll say they're empty boxes. And he gave me the day off. Because this is what they do, yet they say to you, within your own sphere towards the company which is employing you, you should not lie. You should not steal. You should be there at the time you're promised to be there, and you should stay longer than you ever promised to be there. I worked at a company one time and it was over an hour and a bit away in Sydney traffic, and so it was just simple to get there at 7 a.m. every morning. And despite the fact I got there between 7 and 7.15 and our start time was meant to be 9 a.m., I like to leave early to avoid the traffic going home. But do you think anyone would actually let me do that? Because no, 5 o'clock's when we finish. And actually, despite the fact I was there 2 hours earlier than everybody else was meant to be, staying after 5 o'clock was considered what's righteous in that place. So if you went before 5 o'clock, didn't matter how much time you had been there before, time afterwards was what's meant to happen. And so you fall into this culture, and it takes a strong person to say no. I was blessed with being the purchasing manager, so I magically just invented and found places to go and visit, which always took me close towards home towards the end of the day. It's a miracle when you're the boss. My first job, you clocked in and you clocked out. And I enjoyed my work. It was great work. I really got a lot out of it. But I wasn't there to work. I was there to get to know people and know the Lord. It was my first church. I was very excited. I worked as an arms manufacturer. And so when the first Gulf War started, we were put on a war footing, and you have to do more at certain times. That's fair enough. I turned up for overtime on Saturday, And I was surprised to find the whole place working. I said, gosh, does this happen all the time? And they all looked at me and said, yeah, we do this every day. Every Saturday, we're all here. And I looked and said, what are you doing? So I said, well, we take it easy during the week. And we come and do things on Saturday because we get paid more to do it. And I was just flabbergasted. There was one gentleman, he'd worked 7 days a week for his entire life. He arrived back from the few days of holiday he took, he landed and went straight to work. The people where I worked had figured out, because they all had security cameras, they'd figured out the route you could leave and go away to avoid the security cameras to nip off to the pub and come back again. And this is the culture they want you to join in. But we've got to say no. And we've got to be honest. Because we've got to do King's work. Is it okay to deceive another company, yet a company demand from you that you should be honest? And so the challenge I've got for us today is, are you doing King's work? You see, David is first recorded by starting his kingship, starting his training by serving. David understood that to rule was to serve others. That servant was simultaneously king, which is why Jesus is the servant king. You see, all true work combines two elements. Ruling is what we are meant to do, but serving is how we do it. Adam and Eve were given dominion. At the very start, they were given work. Go and look after the garden. Bring it up. Keep it within the order it's meant to be. Look after all parts of creation. They had dominion over the place, but it was servitude or service they used to demonstrate it. This is really key. Whatever job you do, it does not denote how righteous you are before God. And therefore, getting higher up in it shouldn't need to mean you're more righteous. But unfortunately, we fall to that. We need to stop adding extra jobs or positions as a way of understanding our righteousness. Our job should be fulfilling, but we should not seek fulfillment through our job. The greatest king of all was a carpenter for the greatest part of his life. There was a photo this week of President Joe Biden and his wife with President Jimmy Carter and his wife. I don't know whether you saw it. It's actually from a strange angle and it was very weird. But it did remind me of how much I liked Jimmy Carter. And there's a very famous quote from someone I was listening to, and he's recounting an actual story. He said this Christian woman came very up to him, very, very upset about President Jimmy Carter. And she said to the pastor, do you know what Jimmy Carter spends his time doing? The pastor knew but asked the question. And what Jimmy Carter does, President Carter does, having stepped away from being president, is he now spends his time doing Habitat for Humanity. Habitat for Humanity builds houses for those who don't have them. And this lady was particularly annoyed because along with Jimmy Carter, his two ever-present Secret Service agents, which every president gets for the rest of their life, was at Habitat for Humanity. They all have to stand around, and as he works, Habitat for Humanity. And this woman was furious. And she said, you know this man? He was a Christian leader. He was one of the most powerful person in the world. And you know what he spends his time doing? He's a carpenter. And she could not see the irony at all. And I read this day, and I worked it out, I think he's 96 now, and in 2017, it's only like 4 years ago, he must have been about 91, 92, he had to have extra water given to him because he was dehydrated and suffering from dehydration and exhaustion. Why? Because at 92-year-old, this Christian guy was still working for Habitat for Humanity. Because he may not have, in your mind, been a great president, but I can guarantee you he's a beautiful Christian presence. And isn't that amazing? That's just incredible to watch. Because he's not stepped away from kingly work. In fact, he's made it his whole life. And I want to challenge you particularly because I suspect at the end of this sermon, if I've done the job right, you'll mentally agree with me. And you'll go, the pastor was good this week, wasn't he? He said all those great things. We shouldn't get too involved in our work. It should all be kingly work. We shouldn't step beyond it. Go from that and, it's 9 to 5. I've got to get working again. And you'll go, great, up here. And then you'll forget all about it because you'll practically ignore it. But can I remind you again? Only when we're called by God into the work that he's given us and we do it with his authority, does it stay kingly work. And so let us keep challenging ourselves. I'm by no means finished. Stick with me. Because work can reveal your character. It can reveal something essential about us. It can express our values, articulate our morals, show via our actions what our convictions of sin might be or how it means to be human, whether we're creating the image of God. All of that can be revealed by how we carry ourselves within our work. Conversely, we can hide. We could pretend to be something that might make us blend in with the work around us, but doesn't reveal God. We can spend our time ducking and diving, pretending to be something else. And so the question is, as you get to know yourself and as you get to know other believers around you, is that work a place where they're revealing themselves and God, or is it a place where you are hiding yourself from God? David's first role was to bring the order of God's peace upon King Saul, who had stepped so far away. And whenever King Saul had his dark moods upon him, David would come and with a harp and lyre would play and bring peace and soothing to Saul's soul. He would bring order to a disordered mind and disordered emotions. It's one of the beauties, and we were discussing this just before we came in, that the beauty of having musicians, because most people in life never get to sing. You know, maybe you go off to an AFL, you get a few chants. But the blessing of getting to sing and praise God every week should never be underestimated. And God loves music so much, he set whole clans up to be musicians for him in the temple. Because music brings harmony and rhythm, brings tunefulness. And what could be, especially if you let me do it, discordant and potential chaos in the hands of those who are gifted becomes the heart of King's work. And it's always a blessing to be able to use music to step yourself into the presence of God. And that's what we see David doing as his first task with King Saul. That was his kingly work. So I'm just going to summarize, and don't think this summary is the end. It's not. I'd hate to you to be prematurely disappointed to think the pastor's going to shut up and sit down. So let's go back over things. God is not a usable resource. He is never there to be used by us. Surrendering ourselves to God means surrendering not only on the things we are poor at, which is often simpler, but it's also surrendering to the things that we are good at. Let's remind ourselves that work is not sinful, but it is meant to be kingly. And we are meant to be doing that king's work. All true work combines two elements of serving and ruling. Ruling is what we do, but serving is how we do it. Do we hide ourselves or reveal ourselves during our working week? And are we remembering that doing God's work, King's work, reveals God's kingdom? So that's just what I was saying, but I've got an application now. We talk about the margin for error. I was traveling with Rebecca and the family. We were going to a place called the Janolan Caves. Beautiful place if you can get to visit it. It goes down this massively steep, winding road, very narrow. You don't want to get it wrong. And I'm just driving down this, coming around the corner the other way, a completely blind corner, was a tourist bus. And they're huge, whacking great things. And I just scraped on the anchors, managed to hold tight. It came round the corner. And as you can see, we're still here to tell the tale. But I wouldn't want to go through that many, many times over. The margin for error was very, very small. What you wanted to do, and if you're a safe driver, you create that margin between where disaster exists and balance can be existing. And so when I say I want you to create margin in your life, you can perceive it within driving circumstances, but do you do the same within your own life? So one of the authors from BUV wrote this, or quoted this. In the book, The Origin of Others, it says that one of the things we fear about strangers is that they will disturb us. Over time, I've come to realize that unless I'm being disturbed or interrupted, I'm probably missing a great deal of what God might like to do in me and through me. Therefore, one of the key challenges I've identified in my own life is how much margin I leave to have even a friendly conversation in my street, let alone go out of my way to help someone on the side of the highway or a busy corner in the city. It's easy to be loving and compassionate in the lives and areas of my life I have under control, but not so easy when I have to reach beyond the comfort and be disturbed or interrupted. I'll just stop just there and come back to it. If you're so busy in your work, if you're taking on so much that you have no spare margin for anything, you're missing out on what God would have you to do. You've stepped beyond King's work and doing it on your own, and you're missing the whole point of being part of the kingdom of God. This author says, if he was to sum up the Good Samaritan, and this is just one interpretation, he'd say it was to go out of your way to show a little bit of kindness, to break a few of your habits and routines so that you have time to listen and understand another person's story. And so they leave these challenges, and I think it applies to work and therefore applies to this passage we're looking at. And here's the first one. How much margin for love and compassion are you leaving within your life and routine to engage not only within those in the street, but those who may interrupt you? And just think about this at work. If you're so busy that all you can do is go, give me that, do this, get out. How much are you missing about a life? I've said often, and I make no bones about it, the cosmic joke that God has called me to be a pastor, because I started off with zero empathy at all. I sat next to a guy for a whole year. He got divorced during that year, and I knew nothing about it because I spent no time talking to him, because all I did was do a job and leave. I had no time for the people around me, much to my embarrassment and regret. And one of the first things I needed to learn is people are important. And you got to create the margin. And whilst I may have been great getting to know people at my new church, and hopefully I was blessed by them and be a blessing to them, I was a lousy witness at my work. How much margin are we creating in our work life to say, people there I'm working with are important and I've got to get to know them as well? One of the things I suspect all of us missed during COVID is that chatting around when you're having a cup of coffee, grabbing some water and just seeing how people are, pulling up to a desk and chatting to someone and saying, how was your day? Because work should not just be about achieving the goal, it should be about being with people. The same comes for a challenge to our own church community. Are you making time to get to know one another? Are you spending more time with each other and saying, I won't go and do X activity because I want to spend more time with the people of God and get to know who they are and reveal about myself? And then the final part, which stems beyond, well beyond work, which says basically this. How much margin are you creating so that you will spend time with people in your street? That you'll engage with people in your suburbs? That you'll spend time with your community outside of the church and outside of your place of work? Hopefully all of us have got some sort of hobby. I know many of you do. And if that hobby is important to you, that's great. But the people that you do that hobby with should equally be as important as well. I know it's not always easy because other people don't come with the same mentality, but we should. Kingly work brings God's kingdom, and we do it by serving properly, but we should do it in His strength and with His margins built into our life, so we're always able to see and act upon opportunities He presents to bring that order from the chaos which is going on around us. And you'll only be able to do that if you're prepared at some point to build that margin into your life and say, I'm here for God, not He's here for me. There's a lot to think about. Let me pray. Jesus, may we not just hear and forget, but may we hear and be convicted. May we hear and be challenged. And may we hear and maybe change our routines to achieve your work in us. We give you glory and we thank you, Lord. Amen. Thank you.